a street. Lengthwise, it's the size of 1,056 elephants in the room, skin till you saw the white privilege all in one line when I stand on my side of the street.
That's Bisa Adero. She's a lively, young St. Louis poet who also has a very serious side, and she's got big dreams for the future. She's only 17, but she's got a lot to say about our city. I'm Nancy Fowler.
And I'm Willis Ryder Arnold, and this is Cut and Paste Arts and Culture Podcast.
We met Adero recently at her high school, Grand Center Arts Academy. We were joined there by St. Louis's first official poet laureate, Michael Castro, who's 71. He'll wrap up his term at the end of this month.
Just given their ages, you can imagine Castro and Adero look at St. Louis from different viewpoints, but they have activism in common.
We started off talking with each of them about what they see as the role of the poet.
The poet, in terms of politics, is often sort of ahead of the curve and tries to be the unacknowledged legislators of mankind, is what Shelley said. And Ezra Pound called the poet the antennae of the race, like our antennae are out there feeling into the future. So I think we have to be critical where appropriate, but also visionary where we can be.
Do you agree with that, first of all, visionary and
critical when appropriate.
Critical when appropriate and yet visionary. What does that mean to you?
I think it's because it depends on who you are. Some things are not appropriate when you think they're appropriate, and some things are appropriate when they're not appropriate.
I recognize that was a problematical word for you. because we're always breaking boundaries and rules as poets.
What sort of boundary transgression do you think is actually important for poets to be engaged in?
I think as poets we try to be provocative, to provoke thought, and that may not always be the prevailing thought in the community or in the nation. You know, LGBT is a big, is a good example of that. Well, making exisms out of all the things like sexism, homophobia, and all the bigotry, that would be an example of, I suppose, boundary transgressions from some people's point of view.
Sure, yeah. And talking about that directness piece, I understand that you've been known to use a word or two that we might have to bleep out.
In our poetry club, I'm like the leader. And so like I try to teach them to remain from doing curse words unless like they can't describe anything besides that, like blanket or well blank. It's like if they can't describe anything for that word, then go ahead and use it. But don't just make a poem up and it's just like, because eventually they're going to be like, okay, we get it. Sometimes it is good for catching people's attention because people can relate to that probably really quickly. One poem of mine, it's about how boys may talk about girls in like messed up ways. And so I use him having stinky breaths as like a way to describe it. And I'm like trying to offer him all these things that keep him from having stinky breath, like double mint gum. And I compare that to like double standards. But like there's certain words like I used the A word because that's what I
describe. The A word?
Yeah, to describe how it smells. Well, for example, me and my friend are working on this poem. And it's like a woman poem. And we use like different ways of saying the vagina. So it's kind of funny trying to figure out words. Like we have the vagina and then we have like the P word. It catches their attention for the most part. Like if they wasn't paying attention before, as soon as I said the P word, they're like, whoa, okay.
So it's a device to get people to listen.
It can be that, or you just don't have any other way to describe it.
So let's hear a little bit about what we're talking about here. Bisa, you have brought some of your work here. Could you read it for us?
Mm-hmm. When we were entering to be the Youth Poet Laureate, we had to do a poem about crossing the divide in Missouri. And so I did mine based off the Del Mar Divide. When the vest bottle top pops off from pressure, it tends to maim the moon, leaving light to make its stance on the Del Mar Divide. A divide. A street. Widthwise, it's the size of a young white male standing on the shoulders of a black family. It takes black families, black lives, black blood for a white man to survive in the streets. A divide. A street. Lengthwise, it's the size of 1,056 elephants in the room, skin till you saw the white privilege all in one line. When I stand on my side of the street, Black bodies get popped off from pressure. At the exact same time, Mike's body tends to maim the radiance off of a newborn white baby, leaving light to make notice of my hands reaching out to another of no correlations. My hands reach out to show him I am not as dilapidated as my home. His hands reach out to show me where my great-grandfather's body hangs in his Tudor house. My hands reach out to show him these weeds that fracture the concrete are before its roses prime. His hands reach out to show me that their wine bars taste like the blood of those who dared to cross the street. Black and white hands reach for each other because we know a hug is daring Jim Crow's to make death do us apart. Black and white hands reach for each other as if we know a finer future is only a grip away. Black and white hands reach out to each other fiercely as if our child, a breed of curiosity, frustrations, grievances, and freedom formulate to a soul with the red bone tone that just don't know which way is home. And we can't help but to take in the upshot because there's great power against us in a pavement that our ancestors made. They made us think the opposite grounds hated when we stepped all over them, but we had nothing but love beneath our feet. Our hands are reaching, but who knew how hard it would be to cross the street?
You know, you would have thought that would have come from an older writer.
So you are young, and yet you're so aware. What is it in your life that's made you so aware and so able to describe a situation like the Del Mar Divide?
I'm really involved with my community, so a lot of the issues that go on in communities, even in communities that I'm not a part of, I tend to know about it. I tend to care about it.
How are you involved?
I do different types of community services. I tend to join groups that try to help with communities, like either teaching kids about their heritage or maybe planning like a block party to get awareness around certain issues.
Did this stem from, like, you know, parents or another figure of authority or maybe a...
Yes, my parents get me involved in anything and everything. Anything that could benefit me in any type of way, they try to get me involved into it. And so I've learned to love the things that I get involved with.
Do you think it's possible to be a poet in St. Louis at this time and not be dealing with these issues?
Yes, it's possible. I mean, really, it is. I mean, many poets avoid social issues, view them as transient, and, you know, they're writing for eternity. We like to think that we're writing for eternity, too.
Bisa, why did you choose the Del Mar Divide to write about?
I, as a person, knew that there was some separation in the Del Mar Divide, but I didn't know the history of it. So when I went and looked up the history, it made me want to write about it even more. So,
what was it about the history that made you want to write more?
For one, how long the Del Mar Divide is, hence why I did a little math in my poetry. I had to figure out how long it was. And so I measured it based off elephants and how long they are. The fact that it's 1,056 elephants that could spread down the Del Mar Divide shows that it was really long and that it was a lot of separation. Like, you can tell the difference between what side is what side. You've got certain restaurants on this side. You got messed up buildings on this side. You got cool supermarkets, and then you got markets that don't have the materials that most people might even need.
I think it's great the image you used of 1,000-plus elephants, because poets try to say things in a fresh, new way, and images are such a powerful part of poetry that is a kind of a mind-blowing image.
And then you use bodies to measure the width.
Yeah, I was thinking of, I was really trying to think of how I could describe a lot of the stuff. And so that thought came to mind. I just thought of, like, you know, a family of black people stacked on top of each other. And then on the top was just, you know, a Caucasian man. So, because I had to really think in size-wise, too. So had to be a little accurate.
What does it make you think when you hear her talk about, like, the ways in which she's approaching her writing?
The vitality of the youth community of poets is very inspiring if you go to any of their events. Well, what impresses me most is the seriousness of the subject matter that they explore. They don't shy away from the tough issues. Rather, they embrace them and explore them and find poetic ways to do it, which is great. You leave spiritually uplifted, and that's because the poets of St. Louis, generally speaking, and compared to a lot of poetry in other places, tend to be very direct, you know, and it's not like you have to be a literary scholar to have an idea of what they're talking about.
I'm curious then, you know, in your own writing, Michael, like, how do you think of using language when you're thinking about your audience as well?
Well, every poem demands its own language. I don't really think of audience when I write a poem. I'm trying to totally be absorbed in the poem and what the poem has to tell me. It's a mysterious process often. One word leads to another, one phrase leads to another. You're discovering things along the way.
I'd be interested in hearing you read one of your poems as well.
This is a recent one that was written in 2015 called We Need to Talk. I'm more than your idea. I'm tangible, touchable, a human being like you. We breathe the same air, want the same things. We need to talk. I'm more than my skin tone, more than the weight I bear, more than the clothes I wear, more even than my hair. More than who I sexually prefer, more than my accented speech. Hear me, we need to talk. So get out of your closed mind, it's claustrophobic in there. Thoughts fester if they can't expand. Let's meet, get out of your car, into the street. Let's discover each other on common ground. We need to talk. I say, take off your armor. Put away your gun. Don't just stare dumbly into your smartphone. Hello, or as they say in the East, Namaste and Savati. The God in you honors the God in me. We need to talk.
Now, you wrote that during the early part of your tenure.
Yes.
Have you seen St. Louis change in your time here?
I think there's a lot of people who are looking to do something to make things better, who haven't quite found the thing there to do make things better. What happens in the dynamics of poetry are really interesting. I have ideas about that. Who knows if they make sense? But I think what you're doing, if you're connecting with an audience member, it's like your consciousnesses are at one for those moments.
I'm curious then, Bisa, like, do you think you're looking for that kind of unity, or what brings you to kind of the actual sharing of your poetry outwardly?
When I did the competition last year, I made it, and I was able to become the St. Louis representing team to go to Brave New Voices. And the best part about Brave New Voices was meeting everybody and, like, hearing how they sound and stuff. And it was probably so cool because I don't know if it's a poet thing, but when we got there, everybody was so open to any and everything, and the energy was so welcoming, and you felt like you were, at the end, you felt like you were leaving family or something.
I'm curious then, like, how do you think you'll end up using this role as the Youth Poet Laureate? Do you have any plans for it? Do you have any ways in which you want to use that for any specific purpose?
I know one plan that was kind of automatic with it was the book deal I got, so I know that next year, I'll be putting out a book full of some of my poetry. So that's one plan. And I'm hoping to do more events outside of, like, let's say, like, herb arts or outside of school that could have kids who don't probably get that chance to do poetry and to maybe, like, learn how to do spoken word and maybe different types of poetry and stuff. I don't know why. I've just been having this, like, reoccurring dream, and it's like, I think I might write a poem about it. But it's basically how, like, I'm starting to meet all, like, poets from all over the world, and, like, I'm doing, like, weird stuff, like sleeping on their couch, and then the next day we're, like, eating breakfast and, like, writing poetry and stuff. And so, and I knew it was a dream because I have this one part of the dream where, like, Maya Angelou was, like, whispering poetry in my ear, and I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. I would want to travel more and hear more poetry and get to know more people and experience more things that could benefit to my poetry.
That was Youth Poet Laureate Bisa Adero and St. Louis's first Poet Laureate, Michael Castro. Nominations for a new St. Louis Poet Laureate ended in November, and a new poet will soon be named. This is Cut and Paste Arts and Culture Podcast, produced by Nancy Fowler
and Willis Ryder Arnold,
with the help of our editor, David Cazares.
The music you heard was from local musician Eric Hall.
You can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.